Have you ever had one of those mornings? You know the kind I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
The alarm goes off, you put your feet on the floor, you look around at your life, your routine, your responsibilities, and you just think, I don't recognize my life anymore.
It is such a haunting thought, isn't it? And it's not always that things are, falling apart. Sometimes they are, but
Yeah.
it's more of a foggy sense of dislocation.
Dislocation, that's a good word for
Like
it.
you're going through the motions, but the map you were using, it's just gone.
Exactly. And that specific phrase, I don't recognize my life anymore, that is actually the hook from the material we're diving into today. We're doing a deep dive into episode 6 of the Faith Beams GP podcast, specifically their year-end holiday message called Remember Who God Is Finding Strength When Life Feels Confusing.
And I know what you might be thinking, year-end message sounds a little dated, but the psychology here is actually evergreen. It's timeless. They're tackling this concept they call spiritual amnesia.
Spiritual amnesia. It's a very catchy term.
It is, but it's got some weight to it. The idea isn't just that we get stressed or, tired. It's that when we hit these high-pressure moments, these big transitions, we suffer a kind of data loss.
Data loss.
We forget the core stories, the narratives that are supposed to ground us. It's that sinking feeling of, wait, how did I get here? And where am I even going?
Right. And so our mission today is really to unpack the argument they're making. It's both psychological and spiritual. And it suggests that confusion, well, is this a sign that you're weak or failing?
No, not at all. They frame it as a signal, like a check engine light in your car,
A signal telling you to do what?
to activate a very specific mental tool. Remembrance. It shifts the whole story from, I'm confused, so I must be failing, to, okay, I'm confused, so I need to check my data.
Okay, so we've got a lot to get through. We're going to look at their diagnosis of why this amnesia even happens. We'll analyze the specific text they use from Isaiah 46 and sort of see why they think remembrance is this active thing you do, not just nostalgia.
And then we're going on a bit of a world tour. The source material grounds its argument in four global case studies. Real people.
Where are they from?
The Philippines, Nigeria, Germany, and the US, all dealing with this exact feeling, but in really different contexts.
And then finally, we'll hit the practical stuff, the how-to.
Yes, we're going to walk through this devotional protocol they suggest for slowing down when your brain feels like a browser with just way too many tabs open.
Which I think is the default state for pretty much everyone listening right now.
Oh, absolutely.
So let's get into it. The diagnosis. Why do we feel so lost? The source sets the stage by talking about a world that's just constantly in flux. People are relocating, families are starting over.
Youth were unsure of their path. It really paints a picture of high instability. And what's fascinating is how they identify the core problem in all of this.
Okay.
The source argues that when this external stress hits, when the environment changes around you, humans have this default response. It's almost biological. We forget.
We get tunnel vision.
Exactly. But what are we forgetting? It's not like you forget your address or, your password. Usually, no, you forget the metadata of your life. The source says it's three specific things. First, people forget who God is, his actual character. Second, they forget what he's already done, the history. And third, they forget where their strength really comes from. They start thinking it's all on them.
That last one really hits home. That feeling of, if I don't hold all this together, it's all gonna fall apart.
It's an immense pressure. You lose the plot of your own story because you're so focused on the crisis right in front of your face. And to fix this, they anchor everything in a text from the Bible, Isaiah 46, verses 8 and 9.
Right. Can you read that? They put a lot of emphasis on it.
They do. It says, remember this, keep it in mind, take it to heart, remember what has happened before. I am God and there is no other.
Now, if you listen to the source, you notice they don't just read it once.
No, they don't. They read it, they pause for a good while, and then they read it again, very, very slowly.
Why do you think that is? Is it just for, dramatic effect?
I don't think so. I mean, think about how we process information when we're stressed. We live in a skim culture, right? We skim emails, headlines, even conversations. By reading it twice so slowly, the source is forcing you to decelerate. They're actually modeling the cure they're prescribing.
And they break down that one command, take it to heart. I found that really interesting.
Me too. Because it's not just take it seriously. They frame it as a physiological shift. There's a difference between knowing something in your brain,
Your cognitive awareness.
right, and having that heart knowledge, that deep conviction. The source argues that when you're stressed, your brain is just, It's noisy. It's frantic. The only way to cure the amnesia is to move that truth from the frantic brain to the settled heart.
And the truth is, I am God, and there is no other.
That's the grounding wire. Think about it. When you're stressed, your internal monologue is, I am lost. I am overwhelmed. This replaces your I with the divine I.
Okay, and this is where it got really interesting for me. The source is very clear that God's command to remember isn't a scolding.
Yes, that is such a critical distinction.
It's not like you forgot your keys and now you're in trouble.
Exactly. So many people hear religious commands through this lens of judgment, like you should know better. But the source frames this as a helping hand. They say it so clearly. Confusion is not weakness, it is human.
I love that. Confusion is human. It just takes all the shame out of it.
Completely. If confusion is human, then the remedy remembering is just. It's necessary maintenance. It's not a punishment. It's a survival strategy.
And speaking of survival, they don't just stay in the abstract, do they? They bring in these four case studies.
Right, from all over the world. And this is where the rubber really meets the road. It shows how this plays out in actual people's lives.
Let's start with the first one. We have Maria. She's 33 in the Philippines.
Yeah.
And the source says she's an overseas worker.
Which is a huge deal.
Yeah.
The OFW, the overseas Filipino worker phenomenon, is a massive part of their culture and economy. It's millions of people leaving their families behind to work.
So the context is just radical displacement.
That's it, exactly. Maria's struggle is feeling disconnected and unsettled. She's physically so far from the family she's supporting, and that creates this emotional drift. She feels unmoored.
And her solution, according to the source,
using prayer as a daily anchor. And that metaphor of an anchor is so important here. If you are geographically untethered, you need something,
yeah,
psychological or spiritual, that travels with you. For her, remembering God through prayer created a sense of home that wasn't tied to a building.
It's like her stability became portable.
Precisely.
Then we shift over to Nigeria. We meet Tunde. He's 40. His situation is different. It's not about location. It's about his career.
Yeah, he lost his job, facing a forced career change, which is, you know, a classic identity crisis. For a lot of us, our job is our compass. It's who we are.
And when he loses that, he's just lost.
He is. But look at the specific way he finds his footing. The source quotes him.
What does he say?
He says, I forgot that God had helped me before. When I remembered that, I found peace.
So he's using the past to stabilize his present.
That's the key takeaway right there. When Tunde is staring into the void of the future, what am I going to do? He looks backward to find data. He remembers, okay, I've been here before in a tight spot and I was helped. That memory becomes the evidence he needs to face the uncertainty now.
It's like he's building a legal case for hope. He's looking for precedent.
Evidence-based hope. I love that. He's not just wishing, he's recalling.
So for Maria, it's connection. For Tunde, it's confidence. Both are dealing with these huge external pressures that shake their internal foundation.
And that leads us perfectly into the next two examples, which are about, I would argue, the two biggest epidemics of modern life, loneliness and burnout.
Let's talk about Anna in Germany. She's 29, moved to a new city for her job. I mean, this is such a common story, right?
So common. You chase the opportunity, you get the job, you move to the cool city, and then you realize you are profoundly alone.
The paradox of the modern city. Surrounded by millions of people, but totally isolated.
And her struggle is anxiety. It's born from that isolation. The source says she felt alone until she started remembering God's presence with me.
So how does that help?
It reframes what alone even means. If you accept the premise that God is present, then solitude is no longer empty space, it's occupied. Anna is populating her empty apartment with a presence that brings comfort. She replaces anxiety with trust.
She's changing her reality, not by changing her circumstances, but her awareness.
That's it. The room is still quiet, but the silence feels different.
And finally, we've got Jason in the United States. He's 44, and his struggle is burnout, mental exhaustion.
Jason is the one who really feels like that high-functioning learner profile we talk about. The source says he carried stress quietly. What a phrase.
Carried stress quietly. Ugh. Yeah, he's the guy who looks like he has it all together, right?
Yeah, absolutely. He's achieving, hitting his targets, showing up, but inside, the engine is just overheating. And his big struggle is defined by one word, rush.
He's moving too fast.
So fast, he can't even see the landscape. He says, I forgot who God was in my rush. Remembering him helped me slow down.
Which raises a really good question. Is all our busyness, our rushing, is it just a defense mechanism to avoid thinking?
Oof, yeah. If I stop moving, I might have to feel something. For Jason, remembering wasn't just a mental exercise. It was a braking mechanism. You can't remember deep truths while you're sprinting. You have to stop.
So the act of remembering actually forced a physiological change. He had to slow down.
Yes, the source makes it clear. Slowing down is the prerequisite for clarity. You have to stop running around the house to find your keys. Jason had to stop to find his life.
So, okay, we've seen the diagnosis, we've seen the examples, but what do we do with this? How do we actually apply it? Because just remember is easy to say when you're calm.
But when you're stressed, your brain is, like you said, a scatterplot.
Right. So the source moves into this very practical protocol, a quiet devotional moment.
And I really appreciate that they make it actionable. It's not just think nice thoughts, it's a sequence.
Okay, so let's walk through it. It starts with recapping the core truths from Isaiah. What were those again?
Four key points. One, God does not change. Two, he remains steady. Three, he is greater than your confusion. And four, this is the big one, clarity comes through remembrance.
That's the methodology.
Yeah.
You don't get clear and then remember. You remember and then clarity comes.
Exactly.
Okay, so with that in mind, here's the exercise they recommend. Step one, pause.
Which, as we learn from Jason's story, is often the hardest part. It's fighting that urge to just keep moving, keep fixing.
To step two, place your thoughts before God. Just lay them.
Yeah.
And then step three is this specific affirmation. They suggest saying quietly, God, I remember you. I trust you. I receive your peace.
And notice the verbs there. I remember. I trust. I receive. They're active, present tense choices.
It's not a passive plea, like, please make this feeling go away.
No, it's an assertion of your will. You are choosing to shift your focus right in the middle of the storm.
It's a way of reclaiming agency. Instead of being a victim of your confusion, you become the agent of your memory.
That is a beautiful way to put it. You're taking control of the narrative inside your own head again.
The source then wraps this section with five key takeaways. I wanted to just run through these quickly. Number one, confusion does not mean failure.
Which is the permission slip we all need. If you're confused, you're not failing. You're just human.
Number two, remembering brings strength. Number three, God remains steady through change.
The one constant variable in the whole equation.
Number four, faith restores clarity. And number five, hope grows when truth is remembered.
And you can see the logic in that progression. You stop labeling yourself, you use the tool, you find the constant, and the result is clarity and hope.
It's a really powerful formula. And as the source winds down, there's a final prayer focused on bringing direction and peace to families, to the community.
Mm-hmm. It reinforces that this isn't a solo journey. Confusion makes us feel isolated, but that prayer kind of weaves you back into the community.
And then, of course, they drop a little teaser for their next show about how God holds the future.
Which is the logical next step, right? Stabilize the present. Then you can start to look forward.
But this got me thinking, and this is the thought I really want to leave you, our listener, with today. The source argues that memory is the tool that stabilizes us in the present. We look back to find our footing right now.
Right.
So here's the provocative thought. Is it possible that our anxiety about the future is simply a failure to curate the data points of our own past?
Wow. That's a profound question. Say a little more on that.
Well, think about it. Are we so scared what's coming just because we've been bad archivists of what's already happened? If we really, truly remembered, deep down, all the resilience we've shown, all the times we believe we've been helped, would the future really look so threatening?
Or would it just look like the next chapter?
Exactly.
So you're suggesting that anxiety is a failure of curation? That we delete the files of our victories and we only keep the files of our failures open on the desktop.
That's it, exactly. Maybe the key to facing the future is actually found in the rearview mirror. You just have to clean off the glass.
So if Tunde really archived his history, I survived this, then that happened, I survived that, then this job loss isn't the end. It's just another data point on a trend line of survival.
Be a better archivist of your own life.
I really like that.
The source ends with a call to action. To share this message with someone who feels unsure, you know, to be that stabilizing force for someone else. And honestly, in this world, I think we could all use a little more of that. We hope this deep dive helped you find a little clarity today. Thanks for listening.
Take care.